The actor Matt Damon still looks like Private Ryan, the blonde American kid whose life had to be saved in the World War II movie. But Damon is 33 years old now. He's a Hollywood commodity who can sell a big summer movie and star in the sequel. Later this month, The Bourne Supremacy opens across the country. It's a follow-up to The Bourne Identity, where Damon played a CIA assassin. Matt Damon came to our studios yesterday, and once we got him all past all the women who just happened to be standing in NPR's lobby when he arrived, Damon talked about some of the influences on his acting. He started with a lesson he learned from a high school drama teacher named Jerry Specka.
More than anything, it was a philosophy, and it boiled down to five words. He would always say, just do the work, kid. And he made you want to discipline yourself, and so any sense of kind of discipline that I had, which really saved my ass later on, particularly with a film like, say, Courage Under Fire, where I went to great lengths to leave a lasting impression because it was the one chance I'd had at work in quite some time. Mm-hmm. Most of what I had to do to prepare for that movie was very solitary. No one was around saying, good job. You know, I was running 13 miles a day and not eating enough food. You know, that really, really grinds you down mentally after a while. And so to have a mantra like that in my head, and to really believe it and to know that it had worked for me in the past and to know that the work was its own reward, something that's still with me today and will be forever.
One of the reasons that I was interested in technique and where you've learned what you've learned is that when I've seen you on screen, and I mean this as a compliment, I actually don't notice any technique. It seems like you're just right there, you're in the role, and I don't notice any crutches or tics that you seem to have or that you lean on.
Thanks.
And I wonder, how do you get to that point?
Well, for me, it's kind of a process of throwing everything against the wall and seeing what sticks. I mean, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I mean, there are times I've looked at things that I've done and said, yeah, all right, that's all right. But most of the time, I'm unhappy with it. And normally, the one kind of process I've found that works most of the time is just to do every possible thing I can in the preparation phase. The more time I have to get ready for a role, the better I usually am going and living somewhere for a while. You know, becoming part of a community somewhere, walking around, just trying to soak stuff up about what the person I'm playing, what their life experience would be like, and then take things in my own life and throw them in there too.
What's an example of that?
The Rainmaker, a movie that I did with Coppola, which was a big, big break for me. You know, we weren't making Citizen Kane, but still, everyone approached it, their roles very, very seriously. And I went to move to Knoxville, where my character was from, and I bartended there because he bartends in the book. And just started talking to people. Slinging drinks is a really good way to get people to talk because I really wanted to get the sound of Knoxville, Tennessee, which is very different from Memphis, Tennessee. And the Bourne movie, for instance, it was about trying to be credible as a character that was, you know, I look young. I look, you know, like Opie, you know, and to try to be a guy who's this lethal, you know, assassin. I had long conversations with the director of the first film, Doug Liman, and we were trying to crack it and figure out how to do it. And he came up with a great idea, which was, he always saw boxers and the way boxers move and the way boxers walk. There was this kind of momentum that they had and the directness that they had. So I boxed for 6 months just to try to change the way that I walked.
So that you look like a tough guy on screen, to convey being a tough guy.
Yeah, to convey a certain security with my own personal space, basically. You know, where his eyes go, where he's looking, all of that stuff really gets informed by the kind of muscle memory of something like boxing and getting punches thrown at you and throwing punches at somebody. If you do it enough, it does change the way you carry yourself. So there was that, and then there was martial arts, which I did for those 6 months also, and weapons training. I mean, I went with a former SWAT shotgunner out to a rifle range, put in a few hundred hours there, because I knew that there were going to be scenes where I held a handgun. The first time he picks a gun up, mm-hmm. It's like an extension of his arm, and it's so comfortable in his hand that it freaks him out and he drops the gun. And the only way to do that is to go and spend tens of thousands of rounds and get comfortable doing that. And then suddenly when you pick the gun up, it's, you know, the gun looks right in your hand. No. So, I mean, I'm sure there's some technique that probably could have saved me a lot of time. I just haven't figured it out yet. I've heard Anthony Hopkins interviewed, and his preparation is a lot more streamlined with the more experience that he has now. When he was younger, he wasted, I guess you could say wasted, a lot of hours just because he was trying everything just to find out what worked. And now that he's so accomplished, he's done so many things and played so many different types of characters, his preparation time is cut way, way down.
No, I've told you, I don't see any shortcuts that you seem to take or obvious moves that you seem to make over and over again, but you're there, you know. I mean, are there some shortcuts that you take from time to time?
Sure, yeah.
Like what?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, a lot depends on the material. Sometimes, You know, you can have an overall good movie with scenes that don't quite work, and to me they'll never work, and they're hard to watch, and they're what I call flinch moments. You know, Ben and I always nicknamed these things, and Casey, his brother, nicknamed them flinch moments. They're the things that wake you up in the middle of the night with a start. You flinch and you go, oh my God, I can't believe I did that.
There's some broadcast moments like that too.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think, you know, just about every movie I've ever been in has got two or three of those moments that keep me up at night. I don't know, to me the benchmark was always Brando. I mean, I watch his stuff and there's just nothing. It's just seamless. It's just a different thing he's doing than anybody else does. And that's obviously the goal, not to be Brando, but to arrive at some kind of place, you know, that's as close to that as possible. I remember that Connie Chung interview where he said, in the kingdom of the blind, the man with one eye would be king. You know, maybe we all just looked like fools to him.
Mm. When Brando died, the film critic A.O. Scott wrote about Brando's non-verbal actions, the messages he sent with the way he might almost unconsciously stroke a cat's belly,
right,
or make some other move. When you were going into a scene, do you sometimes think about, well, if I move my hand this way, or are you just trying to be there?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you start thinking about that stuff, you're in deep trouble.
Well, Matt Damon, thanks very much for coming by.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
And you can hear more of this conversation with Matt Damon at npr.org.